Welcome to the 30 to Life podcast, where we break stereotypes, build legacies, and help others along the way. It's your boy Mookie.
And your favorite color in the world, brown.
And welcome back to another episode of the 30 to Life podcast, where we redefine the Black experience. And we break stereotypes, and we build legacies, and we help others along the way. So once again, thanks to everyone who's listening. If you are a fan, or if you want to be a 30 to lifer, all you have to do is share it. So hit that share button right now. Text your friend, your family. Don't be stingy. Give to the needy, because people need to hear 30 to Life podcast. Right, Brown?
Right. Absolutely.
Now we're on YouTube now, too. Mm-hmm. We ain't bring it up, so I want to address it now. We're on YouTube. So for you visually inclined, go to YouTube. Go to YouTube and just watch us, right? Yeah. Like, we got 5 episodes up every week. A couple days after we release the audio, you'll have the visual experience too. So if you want to watch it twice, you could do it. You want to listen, then watch it in the car and do whatever. We give what the people need. People want to see us, we here. Yeah. So we appreciate it. Comment, like, subscribe, do all that good stuff. And we got some big surprises coming up, so just continue to be a follower, continue to redefine our experience. So Brown,
yes sir,
what's going on, brother?
Like, yo, it's been a while. It's like a week off, unexpectedly.
Yeah, yes, it's crazy. It's busy out here. Yeah. You know, yeah. The streets getting busy.
Work has been literally like, it was this one day. I was like, yo, I don't know how I'm gonna hold it all together. On the spectrum of craziness, I say it's like from 0 to 100, it's been like 95 crazy.
Like 95.
Like, healthcare is a rough industry right now. And like I said before, and I'll say it again, if you know any healthcare workers, just go give them a hug. Tell them thankful. Tell them thank you. You know,
the people. Buy them like a cup of coffee or a donut. Yeah. Or something.
Xbox. Yeah.
Some PlayStation. Pay a student loan payment.
Yeah. Oh, that one right there. Listen, Biden, if you want to really make a difference, and if you want my vote, get rid of all healthcare workers' student loans. You know, I think we deserve it. We putting up with some stuff right now, y'all. Just some stuff.
Yeah, I bet you more people are going to healthcare randomly. Like,
exactly.
I'm trying to break it down. Yeah.
Instead of leaving healthcare, right?
Yeah. And teachers too. We got teachers have tough too.
You ain't told no lie. Teachers literally, in my opinion, at least like healthcare workers get paid. Like, teachers just get disrespected. Like, y'all, I'm sorry, y'all. Like, we got to do something for y'all too, y'all.
And teachers used to have like power, right? Like, you know, the teacher's like, oh, your son's not paying attention in school. Oh, the parent at home's like, you got to pay attention at school. Now you say the kid's not paying attention in school. The parents come in. What you mean my kid's not paying attention in school? So it's a totally different dynamic. And it's very difficult for teachers, and they're underpaid, similar to like, I would say social workers, right? Like, they deal with a lot. And underappreciated. So yeah, if you're gonna do healthcare workers, do teachers, and then social workers.
Yeah, too. You got to. I agree to that.
Yes. But I wanna go into the work stuff, right? You know, more like the imposter syndrome. But before we go into that, mm-hmm. you know, I recently went to the African American Museum, so I wanted to kind of like, you know, barbershop talk. You know, talk about that experience. I got to go back again because you know. It's too many levels to this, but
that was your first time, right?
Yeah, first time. Yeah,
okay.
Yeah. So I tried to get through it all, but
it's too much.
It's impossible.
It's too impossible. Much. Yeah, I went back in February. You know, like I told you, like you gotta make sure you at least have 2 to 3 days just to go and actually, like, if you want to absorb the information, and that's the thing, because there's a lot of information to absorb. If you're, you know, someone who knows anything about African-American history or just African history in general, like you know some of the stuff, but the level of detail that was really put into this was phenomenal. I mean, and on top, like, the way that they set everything up.
The precision.
Yeah, exactly. The precision and how everything was just orchestrated inside. Oh my gosh. Kudos to whoever curated that. Or I know it's a group of people, but kudos to you guys.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's definitely, it's free, first of all. So people, if you've never been to the African American Museum, go. Anyone who's listening.
There is a wait, right? You gotta put your tickets in ahead of time.
Yes, you gotta pre-plan. So if you're trying to go now, this we're in April. If you're trying to go in May, that's not happening. But if you want to go in maybe all July, August, you can plan it to go, right? Go straight to DC and experience, you know, our whole entire legacy, right? It is several floors, and everyone's that went there told me that you're going to need two visits to go there, right? So I actually did the opposite. Everyone says that you start from the bottom floor. I started from the top. Which way did you start?
Why? I did the bottom.
because at the bottom, there was probably, I don't even want to lie, about
the line,
a 2-hour wait just to get into the exhibit.
That's fine. Okay.
It was insane. And I'm like, what?
And you brought your daughter, right? Your daughter
was Yes, okay, yes. So it was over. Yeah.
Because I brought my son, it was the same thing. We had to wait in line for about an
hour. It was it seemed like it was 2 hours because the line was past the line. I mean, the lines was past like the regular like setup to get on there. So you had a separate line for you to get on the real line. So
It wasn't that bad when I
was. Yeah, it was crazy. And it was middle of the week. I'm like, what the heck? Like, people should be working school. It was crazy. So it's probably just because remember, DC shut down the museum and then reopened for everyone in March. And then it probably just opened the floodgates for everyone. So, it was insane. And of course, I started from the top. So I didn't get that that true experience. Everyone like that. Yeah. Because basically I saw all the floors except those the lower three.
Wait. So you didn't see any of the bottom
floors? Any of them? No.
Oh, yeah. You definitely
got to. Yeah. Back. So for our listeners, tell us about that experience. Like starting from the bottom and.
Yeah. So when you first the first exhibit is what we keep talking about is the one on the bottom and. Firstly, as soon as you walk into the building, the internal design is beautiful. Like, it's just literally a beautiful building. But anyway, you go down to the first floor, and like you said, there's a line to get into the first exhibit. But the first exhibit is literally, call it the origin story of slavery based off of skin color, okay? It goes into that chronological order progression of how even Black humans became commodities and just the transition to the American slave trade. So as soon as you walk in, you know, it's quiet, you know, people, it's intense and it's quiet. You know, you have people looking and reading. When I went, it was crowded, but it seems like when you went, it was even more crowded. So when I went, it was crowded, kind of had to maneuver your way around people, but there's a lot of information. There's so much information on the first floor that my experience was the opposite of yours. Like, I went to the first floor and then the top floor, and I didn't see any of the middle. Because that first floor, I literally spent like a good 3 hours just reading. Because there's so much information, but it's so intriguing. You see the actual shackles that they had. You know, it goes into, and I'm going to say it again, it's the origin story. So how Black people even became commodities. And it was really because there was so much money in it. Like people back then knew that this was ethically wrong. Mm-hmm. But just imagine an industry that created so many wealthy people that they looked past any ethics, right? They were like, no, this is too much money.
Yep.
I mean, it was like
tobacco
equivalent tobacco. Oh, I wasn't even gonna say the stock market,
but I would say tobacco because like caused cancer. They already knew about it.
Perfect. Yep. Great. Yeah, yep. I got you. Yeah. Yep.
And you look past it, right?
Perfect.
And now, you know.
Yeah. Yep. And they looked past mm-hmm. it. They, because Black people and white people did not have this. First of all, there was no concept of yep. race. The concept of race didn't come until later in life. So when people saw Black skin, it was just like it was a normal thing for some people, because if you were somebody who traveled, you saw different skin tones, you saw, and it was normalized. And then you had people that of Black skin that had stature. And, you know, the fact that it just switched because it was just about purely money. Mm-hmm. And I know to some people, you know, they might say, oh no, it's hate. No, I know after that exhibit, I no longer believe it's hate. I believe that they have to make themselves hate to do what they have to do.
Or to justify it, right?
People, yep. To justify mm-hmm. it, exactly. Yeah. But I don't believe that.
Well, I guess you say it was evil, right? Because money, I mean, they say the quote, money is the root of all evil, right? So when people, when greed, yeah. And you know, you capitalize off, you know, something, right? It's either is at a turning point where you decide, like, hey, I'm going all in or I'm falling back. And you know, at that time, you know, people went all in and didn't care about, you know, our people.
What I learned was that slavery, to end slavery soon, and when I say slavery, I mean like just like enslaving Black people, it would have crashed the global economy back then. Mm-hmm. That's how important slavery was to the global economy. It would not have survived.
Yeah, of course. It was free
without slavery.
Free labor. Like, what do you mean? Yes. Like, where else?
Well, I never put, yeah. I never put two and two together like that. I never knew, like, I knew it was for money, but I didn't realize the extent it was for yeah. money. And that exhibit really helped me understand, like, money was literally, it would have crashed the global economy back then.
Yeah. Yeah. They would have to choose someone else to enslave, right? Like, at the end of the day. Yeah. Yeah. And I didn't go to the exhibit, but did it touch on Native Americans as the first?
Yeah. So I found that interesting as yep. well. When I want to say that, I want to say that it didn't separate Black people from Native Americans. Like it was kind of like, it was still that kind of like gray area mm-hmm. where Black people could be Native Americans mm-hmm. and some African slaves came over. So that was kind of like in there as well. And I found that very intriguing. Mm-hmm. But in reality, like, you know, like there were African slaves that came over, but there also were Black in Native Americans that were already here. So how that all came about.
I mean, I'm just trying to get some tribe reservations so I can get all these benefits. You know, what's going on? Check the box.
Yeah. But you're laughing, but it's true.
It's 100%.
If that ever gets out that Black people were here, even though it's already out, but if that ever becomes like normalized, then we have every right to
land.
Get that same type of, yeah, we have every right. And that's going to,
again, I mean, we already
crash the global economy.
We already are have rights to land, right? Because anyone who came to America as an immigrant in the early days received land, acres of land, just for coming to America, right? Mm-hmm. We missed out on that. It's rightfully entitled, rightfully something that we should have, right?
Ain't never gonna happen.
But well, 40 acres and a mule. So I'm with that.
Yeah.
And I mean, you just I mean, speak about land, and I'm just thinking like Andrew Jackson, you know, sending that executive order to return all land to slave owners post Civil War. Yeah. That one, I think that was on like the fourth level or something, but that one always sucks in my mind because that's the one that I always know. Like if there wasn't, you know, contrasting parties, right? Because you never see, you know, a Republican president and then like a Democratic vice president, right? And Abraham Lincoln gets assassinated. Andrew Jackson takes over. He's more friendly to, you know, the South, and, you know, the policies are affected like that, right? And I think about those are turning points as well, right? When you look at us, you know, persevering through slavery and us free, you know, Reconstruction was a great opportunity for us to advance, right? We were advancing, mm. And then,
yeah,
you know, post Reconstruction, like we took a dip, fought through that. And then here comes, you know, the next dip, which was, you know, post, you know, Civil Rights Act, where war on drugs and all that other stuff like that. But yeah, just going through like the exhibits and stuff, it just was like, what was the feelings that was going through your head?
Man, so many of them. I think what impacted me the most was the fact that we as a culture went through a lot. Now, when I say culture, I mean like Black America. Mm-hmm. Like Black America has been through a lot. And we have every bit of right to be here, even more so, some can argue, than anybody else. So, you know, when I was in there and I hear, like, I didn't hear any comments there, but I've heard comments of people saying, you know, Black people should go back to Africa. You know, after going to that exhibit, like, I realized, even though I knew this, but like it really solidified the fact that Black people are America. Mm-hmm. like we are every bit of America than white Americans. Like we've contributed so much to American society that if we were all to go back to Africa, America would not be America. America would be something else of a lesser form.
Yeah, we cemented our place in American culture.
Absolutely.
And they can't take this away from us.
And if we weren't held back to the extent that we were held back, come on.
Yeah, they'd be looking at us like we're the model minority group, right? Because look what we were able to overcome. And yeah, it just made me be like, we owe it to our ancestors to like
to crush it.
I mean, to really, yeah, to exceed in every endeavor, right? And not be lazy, right? Like, let's be real. Sometimes like American culture today is like, you deserve everything, right? Like you don't deserve anything, right? You have to work for everything that you have. And our ancestors was focused on the next generation. Today, yeah, we're focused on ourselves.
Oh,
and it's not even like a Black thing. I think it's an every person thing. But for us, knowing that what we went through, we have to continue thinking about not me, but we, right? And that's kind of how like I was feeling from it. Like, no excuses. Think about keep the next generation in the forefront, right? Because this instant gratification that we're in right now, we're just like, oh, I have to, you know, take 8 vacations this year. I have to buy the latest and the greatest. I have to, you know, call out of work for, you know, leave my job and not work and wait, right, until I find something else. Like, what we have, this opportunity in front of us, our ancestors didn't have. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we have to be grateful, right? And we can't take our opportunity in front of us for granted.
Yeah, I'm so happy you said that, because if it weren't for the mindset of them to endure and to make it better for us, where would we be? And like, I have to agree with you. I mean, I think our generation is a little selfish, you know, because we only think about ourselves. We don't think about making it better for the next. And I'm not going to lie, it wasn't for me or until I had kids that I had that mentality, because I want to make the world better for them. Like, even though, like, you know, in context, you know, we have it a lot better than, like you said, our parents, our grandparents. You know, we don't have any of the excuses that they could have at all.
Yeah.
But now, even though it's better, we can make it even better for them. And we can't be selfish. We have to be able to speak up and stop looking for other people to make changes when we're the ones. Like, our generation right now is a generation that should be making the changes.
Absolutely.
Like, we shouldn't be expecting those 60-year-old, 70-year-old. Like, no, like, this is like the ones that actually do stuff are the youth of our generation right now. And it's time to stop waiting. Like, it's us that are going to make the changes and make it better for them, and they deserve it. Just like we deserve our parents making it better for us.
Yeah. And one thing that just like sticks in my mind is like, if you look at the narrative today, you would think that we or Black people have it just as bad as our ancestors today, right? The way that the narrative is. And we can't play into that. We can't make it like the way that if you watch old clips of like the struggles that they have, and then you hear like, you know, media talk about like how we are just in a horrible condition and we're treated horribly and all this racism and stuff, like it's not even to the same levels. And if we get into that mentality of thinking that we have the same struggles as our parents or our grandparents, et cetera, then we're just going to fall into that trap. And yeah, just think about like, oh, what was me? Right. And we can't have that mentality either.
Yeah. I mean, I think of the Black girl who desegregated the all white school. Ruby Bridges. Mm-hmm. Ruby Bridges.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Young girl. Desegregated an all-white mm-hmm. school, and she was the first one to do it. Mm-hmm. The amount of courage that she had to have, even though she was young, and you know, young children, you know, they seem to be a little bit more courageous because they don't have the risks of adult. But nonetheless, courage to have grown white people spit at her, yell at her, call her names, and to do what she did with the integrity that she did so. That's the type of courageousness that we need today to make the changes that we need to make for our next generation.
Absolutely. 100%. Right. We have to, you know, be the individuals who continue to break the ceiling, shatter, you know, and also like we have to change the narrative. I mean, this is what our podcast is all about, redefining the Black experience. Like, I mean, it goes back like just thinking about that museum and then like what transpired between like, you know, Chris Rock, Will Smith. It's just like how we treat each other
is important.
We're just perpetuating what they tried to say we were, the rationale for slavery, right? That we barbarians, we can't control ourselves. We have no self-control. We don't respect one another. And we play into that.
Yeah. Even though it was all lies, because they were the barbarians, if you think about it in context. But yes, I agree. Yeah. We can't play into the game.
Yeah. So yeah, we got to be mindful of that. And I know Will Smith, he's done a great job of like, you know, prior to Red Table Talk, done an amazing job of, you know, a model mother, father, right? Yeah. Like a male figure, right? Like you know, with his raps, he was trying not, you know, curse and all of us. Like he, you know, everyone makes a mistake and everything like that. And I'm with that. But like we have no room for error, right? Like in a lot of times and different things. So I just thought about that too. But also,
yeah,
it was one other thing that I was thinking about when it came to something.
I think when we do have error, while you're thinking, I think when we are in error, I think that we also need to do a better job of being understanding that our humanity as well.
Yes, I was going to say that knowing that everything that we went through, our unity should be so much stronger than what it is today.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because yeah, we should definitely be unified at a way, you know, concentrated level, right? Like, you know, where it's like, they're like, oh, you know, we want the Black vote. Like Black people are like, no, you're not getting our vote. This is what we demand, X, X, Y. And, you know,
because we're selfish as a general population or group. I think nowadays we're selfish, we're comfortable. You know, we're in it for ourselves. We're not thinking of that next generation at all, I think. Because if we were, we have the means to do so. I'm sorry. I'm just going to call a spade a spade. We have the technology. We have the brains. We have the money. Like, what is our excuse at in this very moment right now?
It's just, we just, I think we just segregate each other within the Black community. That's what we do. We got
divide and conquer technique.
We have, you know, your Jack and Jills. We have your, what is it? Bougie. We got hood. We got light skin, dark skin. We got, it's just so many different levels of, I mean, yeah, the way that we segregate within the Black community, right? I would say more than everyone else. And obviously, most of it designed based off, you know, legislature or, you know, rules and check, you know, or untold rules and stuff like that. But I just wish that we were more unified.
Yeah, I mean, I said it before on the show. Like, I know that, you know, Marcus Garvey got this, you know, he got expelled, you know.
What do they call it? When they
I don't want to say extradited, but like,
well, no, because he wasn't going to jail in Jamaica. But yeah, what's it called?
Deported.
Yep.
Yeah. So yeah,
I said exported. He was exported. So.
Sorry, long day. but yeah, he got deported, and his whole, I guess, objective of having Black people have their own land, own army, own financial economy. But I think that idea, you know, can still live on today. You know, we have the means to do so. Like, they're, I mean, we have the land. We know that Africa is the largest continent or one of the largest continents. We know that there's like a million, not a million, I'm being excessive, but like you can fit a couple of Americas inside the whole continent. Absolutely. Of Africa, like
and enough resources for everyone.
Exactly. We got everything we need. I don't know what it is that we as a people are waiting for. I don't know, and I'm not gonna lie, I don't know what it's gonna take.
Well, we gotta start small.
When we figure that out, it's gonna be a problem, and problem in a good way, because, you know, Africa is literally the most resource-rich land on earth. Why do we not have any stake in that? Why?
Because Black Americans are disconnected from Africa. Like, let's call it what it is. Like, we are disconnected. You say Africa is foreign, but if you say, what's a important area? And you say Harlem. People know Harlem. People don't know Africa. Mm-hmm. Like, at the end of the day, right? When, I mean, your parents told you about Africa growing up? When you talked about South Carolina or something? I mean, I'm talking about, like your legacy, your ancestry, right? It was you know, something deep south, you know, this is where you came from. Like, but beyond that, we disconnected. But, you know, other immigrants, they're still connected to, well, we're not immigrants, we were forced here, but immigrants, right, still have connected because they left their place to come here by choice. And they still have connected in terms of, you know, family and ascension, et cetera. So, so Africa is not, there was a proposal by Abraham Lincoln, right, to send slaves or free men to Liberia, right? And that was going to be an area where he was going to contemplate sending the Black people to Liberia. So who knows if that would have worked out, what would have happened. But that's hearsay. I don't know. You can look it up, Google it. But that was something, proposals that he had prior to Civil War.
We lost base or touch base with our African side, you know. I think that can be some of the reasons why we experience imposter syndrome in the workplace.
So are you saying that because we're disconnected from Africa and our first knowledge that we mostly are told through the American lens is that we were slaves first, right? Then now we're here.
Right. Exactly. Exactly. Imagine only seeing white people on TV all the time. All of your favorite superheroes were white. You, all your favorite TV shows, you had white people in it, with exception to like Martin and The Living Color when those came out. You know, that changed the game.
Oh, but well, Cosby was.
Oh yeah, Cosby Show.
That was a top. That was in the top rated national television in the 80s.
Right.
So that was America's first experience of like a upper middle class family doing the dang thing.
Right, right. But in context, and like you saw a lot more.
Oh, absolutely, 100%. Well, not even that.
You saw black people on TV.
But even like commercials or like, yes, you know, stuff that you buy, that you purchase, it wasn't black people on there. It was white people on there. So you exactly. You knew it was a white centric society growing up, right? Like white was exactly. The, I don't know. White was, yeah. Was what it was.
I got you. Yep. So now imagine us, you know, or even not even us, but just people or black people in general that, you know, had the opportunity to get educated, had the opportunity to now be in corporate America, and now not feeling as if they deserve to be there because of the color of their skin, because they might not have had the education that somebody had, or they could be better, they could be smarter, they could add more value, but they don't believe in it in themselves. And that could be for a myriad of reasons, but you know, I'm going to go out, step on a limb and say that, you know, a part of it is because we don't know our African culture. We don't know a lot of the history that got lost, you know. And so because of that, you know, I think that we're kind of almost starting from the beginning in a sense, like almost rebuilding our legacies. Mm-hmm. And yeah. What do you think about that?
I'm just trying to, so have you been in a room where you felt that because you were black, that
I'm like, yeah,
you know what I'm gonna say? Well, you know, let me finish real quick, but yeah. Because you're black and you didn't have the same opportunities, like, or went to the best, the, you know, Ivy League or, you know, middle class, you know, your parents had everything and handed it to you. You had the best tutors and everything, that you were less than in the room. And he was like, I wish that I received this experience that my peers or my colleagues experienced. Did you ever have that?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you think about it, you know, you have, if you have a family that makes money, right? And when I say money, let's just say middle-class family, and you're able to pay for tutors, you're able to put your child into different sports and be able to afford it and not hurt. You know, you're able to pay for their college without them taking out student loans. Like, you know, all of those are advantageous to any kid. So when you have black kids who don't have that opportunity, who don't go to the best schools, whose teachers really don't teach or can't teach because, you know, for whatever reason, how do you expect them to compete when they get older and they're in, and, you know, they're in these industries and you have a resume of somebody who has all this experience, who has all this education, and you have a resume with somebody who hasn't had nearly about what you have. Like, it really comes down to money. I'm sorry. Like, the more money you have, the better opportunities you can afford your kids. Yes, unless you're going to homeschool them. Yeah. Like, it really comes down to money. Like, if you don't have that bag, how are you going to afford the opportunities for your kids? Like, I'm thinking of, like, my daughter. Like, my daughter is able to go to Catholic school. She's able to not go to the public school system in New Jersey. That is a lot. She's avoiding a lot. She's avoiding a lot of drugs, probably. She's avoiding a lot of, like, this teacher's not doing what they're supposed to be doing. Other students. Like, she's not in the sauce. You know what I'm saying? So at the end of the day, it comes down to money. I'm sorry.
Yeah, no, it's definitely, you know, there's definitely a race issue, but a lot of it can be looked through the lens of classism, right? Like, if we look at it. But yeah, I'm trying to think in terms of, like, feeling that imposter syndrome and just being like, I think one of the biggest things with student loans, I used to be like, you know, as I entered, you know, in the finance industry, like, all of my colleagues would talk about, like, someone paid for their student loans, right? So they had no student loans, right? And it was just so common. And I'm just like, what? So, like, for them, like, the job that they have, how much money they're making, isn't, I mean, you know, we always hear like it's experience over how much money you make. But I think a lot of times the people who are saying that are like in the middle class, upper middle class, and they say that to people. But like, if you don't come from an experience, like what you make matters. Plus, I mean, including the experience, right? And I was just thinking like student loans. I'm like, dang, I remember this one girl was looking at her checking account in the office. And this is like, I'm like 23, I think. And I see her savings and it's like $10,000, just savings, right? Who knows what else is in there? But I'm like, what? You got $10,000 just in your savings? I was like, what?
Yeah. It's sickening sometimes, isn't it? Because it's like, yo, you busting your butt and somebody else is literally...
So far ahead, right? No student loan.
And you're smarter than them. Check.
Yep. Or at least on the same more value. Or at least on the same playing field, yeah. Right? It was nobody who I was like, that person is so much smarter than me, right? Like you could just learn and catch up in a lot of ways, right? But when you have that, like you're gonna look at things differently, right? You're gonna be like, let me get this experience and go to that next job. Where it's like me, it's like, dad, I gotta take the experience or find something a little bit more praying. Like it's more on your mind and stuff. And yeah, sometimes you'd be like, dad, how do we get there? And then also you have the I think the main thing that everybody experiences in our community is like being the only one in the room. Like I think that's the number one thing, right? Like forget about the economics, but it's just like, we in there and we're just like, we're the only one. And then you get into like, why is that? And then you got to figure out how do I assimilate? How do I get acclimated to this environment? And you have to be the only one to go through that. Right. And I went in finances. So like, I didn't have like, pairs or relatives or anything. I was like, oh yeah, they were in finance, so I know how to move through that. You have to figure it out.
Yeah.
And that's where it's like, you're right. Like we're starting like a new and like have to figure that out. And that's where like you can see where the imposter syndrome or like you like, you know, questioning yourself or all the time and stuff. Cause it's like you're the first one to figure that out, right? Now, like if you know someone's in finance and family or anything, they're like, yeah, you know, graduate, what you come, I know exactly what you know what that experience is, what like right
say. yeah
and that's exactly. That's where our counterparts kind of had the head start. The thing that sucks is that we were here the longest, right? We're the last, right? Everyone else, every other ethnic group, minority group, like they're competing in higher spaces than us on a percentage standpoint, and we're now just getting there. So it is true. It does feel like the first one, but I think now, you know, battling through that, why you're the first one and like, oh, why I have all these had student loans or why it's only us in there or why, like, I got to figure it out. Or, you know, after a while, it's just like, you start taking pride in that. Right.
Yeah.
And it becomes a source, instead of a source of pain, it becomes a source of pride. And it's like, I'm, you know, the person who's setting the legacy, setting the standard, setting, you know, the genesis of, you know, my small village, right? Or my last name or something like that. And it propels you forward. Once you start, you know, looking at that versus a different lens, right? Instead of looking like, oh, like all of this happened to us and I don't know where we go from here. Instead of like all this happened to us, and despite that happening, we're still excelling. And I think if we share that excelling like joy to everyone and say, hey, like you succeeded despite anyone else who went through that, they may not have made it on the other end, but we did. And that means we're right to be here, right?
Yeah, I'm thinking about like when I first felt imposter syndrome. And so like for me, like I'm not only, you know, I'm Black, male, and so I'm a nurse, by the way. Yeah, everyone knows I'm a nurse by now, but I'm Black, I'm a male nurse, and I'm also young, like in context to the other like managers and all that, I'm young. So I'm dealing or supervising and or managing sometimes nurses that have been longer, they've been nurses longer than I've been alive. So I found that I'm not gonna lie, it took me a little bit to get over that. I even called my mom one day and I was like, mom, like I'm the manager of a woman who's been a nurse longer than I've been born, like alive rather, like literally longer. Like, I'm not even joking with you. And I found it hard to
tell her what to do.
Her directives. Yep. Yeah, I did. And I, so I remember, I found that hard. I was like, she probably knows what I'm going to say before I'm going to say it. Yep. Like, right. But then like, it wasn't until like, you know, recently when I said to myself, like, there's a reason why I'm in my role and she hasn't been, she's not in this role and she's in her role. Like, there's a reason. And I'm not saying that she can't do my job. I'm not saying that I can't do her job. I'm just saying there's a reason. And I had to realize that, you know, I'm good at what I do and I add value, and there's, and someone hired me because they thought that I added value. They saw that I added value. They know that I could do the job. So if I'm saying, so I said to myself, if somebody else knows that I could do the job, why can't I know that I can do the job?
Mm-hmm.
And that's how I began to work through it in my head. And then I realized that it's also normal. Like, people doubt themselves all the time. But it's what you do with that doubt, you know? But if anybody, like, you know, has moments where they feel imposter syndrome, I don't want you to feel like, you know, it's not normal, because it's super normal. Like I even read recently that Einstein had imposter syndrome. Einstein, what bad things have you heard about Einstein? Literally one of the smartest people that we say is known. And he had imposter syndrome. So it's normal. Don't feel bad for feeling it, but realize that, you know, you're wrong. You know, you don't have imposter syndrome. You do belong there. You know, you do add value.
Yeah. And I think, you know, overcoming imposter syndrome, you know, it's important to write down, right, like, the things you have done and celebrate it. I think a lot of times, you know, we don't celebrate it or we don't acknowledge it, the things that we've done, to remind us, you know, why we're in the roles that we are, right? Like, you know, getting your promotion, right? That wasn't you deciding, you know, it was a committee of people who were like, this person is ready to, you know, take, you know, this extended position.
Yeah.
Right. And you had to go for it as well, which means that you believed it. Not only did you believe it, the people who promoted you believed it as well, right? So it's multiple factors there for reasons why you should believe that, right? And then, you know, all of the steps that you took to get where you are currently, right? That was, you know, challenges, education, right? Like, training, right? Improving public speaking, right? Experience. You know, all of that stuff you did to get there, right? So it's like, mm-hmm. sometimes you have to just write it down, right? Reminding yourself, right? Not a resume, but some, you know, your own personal resume where you're like, hey, I did this. And then we talked about it, I think, two episodes ago, but like, you know, when you get anyone like gives you like, you know, gratitude or just thank you or acknowledges you or give you recognition, create a folder with all that recognition, right? Like, someone's like, yeah, you crushing it. Thank you so much. Like, couldn't done it without you. Bam, put that in there. Bam, like, oh yeah, like, you definitely going to be CEO one day. Bam, put it in there. Put any and everything in there just to remind you at times, because we always tend, well, not always, but most of the time we focus on negative, right? In our brain, like, the negative compounds much faster than the positive. So you have to put mechanisms in place to make sure that there's at least an equal balance between the negative and positive thoughts. Yeah. And, you know, sometimes for other people, like, you meditate, it's prayer as well, you know, just those different things to get you in a zen-like space where, you know, you don't forget these things, because it's so easy to focus on the negative, right? Just look at the stock market, right? Market's down, but people's been up like 50%, but they worried about being down 10%, but they forgot about the other 40% just that quick.
Yeah.
Right. It's just a natural human element to go so quickly. So for everyone listening, start that folder, right? Start that folder, you know, pray, meditate, educate yourself, right? If you really feel that you're lacking in an area, don't let it stay there. Read that book, find that mentor, talk to that colleague, talk to your, you know, significant other, like, do all those steps, right? Or you don't feel like you're a good speaker, or you don't feel like you're in that place, like, practice, right? Yeah. Like, practice doesn't make perfect, but it definitely makes you better. So do what's necessary, and Google and YouTube is right there.
If you're listening out there, before we go, you'll be listening. Listen to one of the first episodes that we've ever done, and then listen to one of the most recent episodes and just see the progression, even in how we articulate our thoughts. I'm going to speak for myself. Came a long way. Definitely came a long way. Like, I was speaking for you right now. You came a long way.
100%.
It's just the power of consistency.
Mm-hmm. Which we're working on, people, for these episodes. So don't judge us. We're working for you.
Yo, when we can do this full time, I'm pretty sure we're going to be as consistent.
Oh, 100%. Yeah. But
yeah, it's just a challenge right now with being the family man, you know, working full
family
time
man.
Yeah, exactly.
But yeah, like, it's progress, right? Like you just need to start whatever you're thinking about doing for yourself, for your future, just do it, right? Like, and if you haven't been to the African American Museum, you need some motivation.
Yeah.
Go there. Start from the bottom floor. Don't be like me. Start from the top with all the success and everything. Start from the bottom.
Yeah.
And rise your way to the top at that museum and in real life.
Yeah.
Okay, guys. So we're approaching episode 100. So
it's crazy.
Can't believe it. So I'm just giving you a forewarning. We're going to do something for the 100th episode. I think we're about 7 episodes away. So just want to thank everyone for, as we approach a 100th episode, which is insane when you think about 100 episodes, right? That's like TV show, right? We're about to hit syndication. 100? 100? So we gotta bring a big celebrity in. We gotta be like everyone else with it. We bring in, who should we bring?
Bob Johnson. Who could we get?
We gotta bring like a billionaire or something like that. We gotta see if we can get somebody. Let us know who you want to see on the episode for our 100th or 101.
Obama. So we gotta get Obama on the show. Yo, could you imagine? Yo, that would literally, yo, we get Obama on this show, yo.
Oh, maybe we could get Obama's brother-in-law or something like that. Like,
yo, he is brother in Africa.
Yeah,
let's reach out to him.
We get somebody, but we're gonna work on something, guys. We really appreciate it. Like, you are capable. Put your mind to it and take it one step at a time. Like, anything's possible, guys. So you, like, go to that museum and learn and continue to redefine the Black experience, because it's your boy Mookie.
And your favorite color in the world, brown.
All right, guys. Thanks for tuning in to another episode. Make sure you hit that subscribe button. Don't be stingy. Give to the needy. People need to hear 30 Fly Podcast. We really appreciate it. Hit that subscribe button. Don't forget. And continue breaking stereotypes, building legacies, and helping others along the way. Lift as you climb. We're out. 30 to life. Peace.